So I thought we'd do something kind of fun today. I thought we'd learn a new language. And that language I call Zenglish. It's what happens when we try and translate the teachings of Zen into English and how baffling they become. So I wanted to be a little bit of a guide today through the language of Zenglish and see if this might give you some insight into what this bizarre story history of Zen is. So Zen is, it's filled with stories and poems and sayings that really seem to make no sense at all. So I'll give you a couple of these and see if this makes any sense to you. So a monk asks Joshu, his teacher, "Does the dog have Buddha nature or not?" And Joshu replies, "Moo." What the heck does that mean? Right? We'll look into that one later. But here's another one. A monk came to see Mazu for the first time, and he asked, "What's the meaning of Zen?" And Mazu said, "Bow down." And as the monk bowed down, Mazu kicked him in the chest. Huh? So we're going to unpack these kind of things. But when I first encountered stories like these, I thought they were absolutely gibberish. They made no sense to me at all because I hadn't learned how to speak Zenglish yet. But it's possible to learn, and I'm still learning. I'll be learning this the rest of my life, I imagine. So I thought we'd take a little peek behind the scenes here and learn about how to understand these stories and how to make them relevant to our daily lives. So let's go back in history a little bit to the beginnings of Buddhism. And Buddhism began in an oral culture. They didn't write things down. And so when the Buddha taught something, he taught it in a way that it could be memorized. And so a good memory was highly valued. They say that Ananda, Buddha's assistant, had a photographic memory, and he could remember what the Buddha said word for word. And so it was passed on this way for many, many years, and it kind of codified. So the Buddha was a bit of a scientist, and he came up with these systems for understanding the mind, and they have all kinds of list names. Like there's the Four Establishments of Mindfulness, there's the Noble Eightfold Path, there's the Eight Realizations of Great Beings, and the 12 Links of Dependent Arising, and there's lists of lists of lists. So they reflected the time in which science was arising, and they were spoken in languages that were very analytical. The Pali and Sanskrit are very analytical languages. They make it easy to take things apart into little pieces and to label things and to think about them very clearly. Well, one of the difficulties with this is that over time, this Buddhism became very complicated. And so within a few hundred years, really the only people who really understood what was going on were clerics or monastics who lived in monasteries and studied this. It just wasn't available to normal people. So after a few hundred years, this moved to China. And in China, it made a real change. It became again available to normal, everyday people. And it had to, because they couldn't speak the same kind of language. Chinese is simply not that sort of language, like Pali and Sanskrit. It's not an analytical language. It's a poetic language. It's an illusory language. It speaks in parables, and this is like that. And you put these two things together, and this shows you what this is, as opposed to Sanskrit and Pali, which is taking things apart. And it also reflected the Chinese culture, which was a really different kind of culture than the Indian culture. So the Chinese, they wanted a direct experience of Buddhism. They didn't want all these lists. They wanted something they could really relate to. And that's what Zen was born from. Zen was sort of like Buddhism's reformation. The Zen practitioners in China saw Buddhism as built up with all this finery and study. And they said, no, boom, go right to the heart of it. Get rid of all that. And that's where these stories come from. That's where these queries come from. They come from the people wanting to get right to the heart of their practice, not thinking about it at all. So in order to understand this, all this stuff that happened in China, this is from the 7th to about the 10th centuries in China, we have to somehow be able to translate these stories back into English. Here's the problem. English is an analytical language just like Sanskrit and Pali, like the original language of Buddhism. And so it doesn't make an easy transition from Chinese with its poetic nature to English with its analytical nature. So we have to learn how to speak Zenglish. And that's what we're going to do today. We're going to learn to speak some Zenglish. And hopefully I'll give you 5 hints for understanding Zenglish. That's our goal today. 5 hints for understanding Zenglish. You ready to dive in? Okay, let's do it. So here's the first hint. The Zen master is answering a deeper question than the one you asked. The Zen master is asking a deeper question than the one you asked. Okay. So as a Zen teacher can usually see that your question arises from something deeper than even you know you're asking. And so they will address that deeper question rather than the shallower question. So here's an example of this. Shi Tao was a famous Zen master in China. And someone asked him, "Where can I find what I'm looking for?" And his reply, "Are you sure you lost it?" "Where can I find what I'm looking for?" "Oh, well, are you sure you lost it?" Shi Tao is actually answering a deeper question than the one this person asked him. The questioner is looking for something outside of himself. "Where can I find what I'm looking for?" "Where is it? I'm going to look all over the place." And Shi Tao's answer, "Are you sure you lost it?" points him right back to himself and says, "The answer is in you." All right? So he's answering a deeper question than the person posed to him. Okay, here's another one. Same theme, answering a deeper question. So this is about Long Tan and Dei Shan. So Dei Shan, who is the student, was pestering his teacher, Long Tan, late into the night with question after question after question after question. He wanted, sort of like Shi Tao, to find something out there, looking out there. So Long Tan had had enough of this, and he suggested that maybe this was over, this discussion was over. So as Long Tan began to step out as Dei Shan began to step out the door with his candle into the dark, Long Tan blew it out. So, you know, so the master saw that the student was asking question after question after question, trying to find something, but we can't find something out there. The human condition ultimately is one of being in the dark. And that being in the dark is actually a very helpful place to be because it means that you're not clouded with preconceptions and ideas that prevent you from seeing the truth. So what does the teacher do when the student's about to step out into the dark? Out goes the candle. So the Zen master is usually answering a question deeper than the one you asked. So that's hint number one. Okay, let's go on to hint number two, which is somewhat related. Hint number two is that confusion is a good thing. Confusion is a good thing. So let's go back to one of the examples I started with, where the monk asked Joshu, "Does the dog have Buddha nature or not?" And Joshu answers, "Moo." Now, let's give you some background on this. The Buddha taught that all things have Buddha nature. All things have Buddha nature. But it seems like Joshu's answer, "Moo," which means, in Chinese it means "nt," like a contraction, not, no. It's a negation. Joshu seems to be saying to the monk, when he asked, "Does the dog have Buddha nature?" He's saying, "No." Well, that directly contradicts what the Buddha taught. What could this be? So I think what he's actually saying here, he's answering the deeper question again and confusing the student. He's saying, "No, that's the wrong question. Look beyond the question of whether dog has Buddha nature or not. and simply hold open the question when you see everything. Where's the Buddha nature? Can I see it? Maybe it's not obvious at first, but I need to keep looking. I need to stay in a state of confusion instead of clarity. Imagine if Joshu had just said yes to the student. Well, the student would have had a shut down mind, not been able to really understand anything in an ongoing way, but just answered one simple question. But confusion's a good thing. So Joshu gave him an enigmatic answer that required the student to keep an open heart and an open mind. So the answer mu is not a negation of the dog's Buddha nature. It's a negation of the rush to a simple answer. Yeah. So confusion is a good thing. Don't answer things too quickly. Hold that open. So this, incidentally, is a koan, and it's usually the first koan that a Zen student receives. So the teacher will say, does dog have Buddha nature? And then he'll give Joshu's reply, mu, and then the student goes off with that. And sometimes it takes years for the student to come back and say, yeah. Okay, so here's the really fun one. Hint number three. Shouts and blows aren't about shouts and blows. So remember the story about Mazu, when the monk came to see Mazu for the first time and he asked, what's the meaning of Zen? And Mazu said, bow down, and then kicked him in the chest. Yeah, shouts and blows. So these old Zen teachers in China were famous for this. They'd shout at people, they'd strike them, they'd push them, they'd do all kinds of things. So what does that mean? Okay, here's the context, here's the backstory. There are standard opening questions when a student meets a Zen master. A couple of them are, what is the meaning of Zen? Or another one is, what is the meaning of Bodhidharma coming from the West, the monk who brought Buddhism from India to China? So the standard opening question is a way for the student to sort of test the teacher. Oh, what's the teacher going to say to this standard opening question? So Mazu got the standard opening question from this monk. What is the meaning of Zen? Now, he responded with a kick, of course, which would land most modern Zen teachers in jail. So you can't really do that. But the context here for that is when Mazu was teaching, he was teaching at a time when 2/3 of the Chinese population died of famine and war. So imagine this for a moment. Imagine if you looked around to everyone you knew and 2/3 of those people died within a 10-year period from famine and war. I mean, this is a pretty brutal moment in history. And Mazu had these students showing up to him with great suffering, tremendous suffering. They lost their family. They lost their home. They might be the only person surviving from their whole village. And Mazu knew that those students needed strong medicine in order to deal with this suffering. And so this was a strong medicine that he gave. But, you know, Mazu was a very compassionate person, despite the fact that he kicked this student in the chest. And his compassion was shown in this, because when he brought him to the present moment with that kick, he's saying, the meaning of Zen is not some theory. It's not some ideology. It's not something you can learn. It's this moment. It's this experience right now. It's a kick in the chest. That's what real life is. That's where Zen is. You know, and I think this isn't that unusual for us. I think we can actually understand this. Our time is one of these times, not nearly so strongly. But you know how hard it is right now to talk to each other, to engage with a person who's carrying a lot of delusions? And so this is strong in the Zen tradition, to cut right through all of the barriers and get right to the core of it, boom, right now. And that's what these kicks and blows are. They're not punishment. They're not cruelty. They're bringing a person right through their deep suffering to the present moment immediately. Immediately. A kick to the chest says, be here now. If you want to know what the meaning of Zen is, it's exactly this experience in this moment. And that's what the kick to the chest was. So just take a second and recall in your own life when something dramatic has happened for you that shifted you all at once. Imagine those things have happened. And that's what this is. So shouts and blows aren't about shouts and blows. They are compassionate devices to wake someone up in the quickest possible way to protect them. So that's the third one. Shouts and blows aren't shouts and blows. And the fourth of the five hints, the best way to say something is to say nothing. The best way to say something is to say nothing. So I want to share with you this playful exchange between two old Zen masters. So Joshu, who the Mu Zen master, and Lin Shi, who was another Zen master who I actually traced my lineage directly back to. I am the 44th generation of practitioners from Lin Shi in my tradition. So these are real people with real lineages. So Joshu asked Master Lin Shi, what is the meaning of Zen? And Lin Shi replied, I'm washing my feet. And Joshu moved closer to examine Lin Shi's feet as though he didn't understand. And he didn't say anything. And Lin Shi says, oh, I'll have to throw out a second ladle of dirty water. And at that, Joshu turned and walked away. Right? Okay. I see some out there in the Zumdo squares. So let's unpack it. So Joshu sends out the first probe when he says, what is the meaning of Zen? So you recognize this, the standard opening line, right? One of them. And Lin Shi replies, I'm washing my feet. So what does that mean? I'm washing my feet. What he's saying is the meaning of Zen is just this right now, exactly what I'm doing. I'm washing my feet. He answered the question in a very unexpected way, right? It wasn't the meaning of Zen, I'm washing my feet? That's very unexpected. So Joshu, being a Zen master himself, he knows exactly what Lin Shi is saying, but he pretends not to understand. And he looks real confused down there at Lin Shi's feet. So Lin Shi takes the bait, right? Lin Shi thinks, oh, geez, this guy doesn't get it. So he says, I guess I'll have to throw out a second ladle of dirty water. And the ladle of dirty water is the words. You know, he showed Joshu what the meaning of Zen is. He was washing his feet. And he threw out the first label of dirty water by saying, I'm washing my feet. He had to say it. But now he has to do it again. Okay, another second ladle of dirty water. And so he has to answer him one more time. And then Joshu answers him cleanly. He turns and he walks away. Turns and walks away. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm turning and walking away. So he demonstrates his own wordless expression to his original question. What is the meaning of Zen? This turning, this walking. Lin Shi's answer, what's the meaning of Zen? This washing of my feet. There were actually no ladles of dirty water, no words needed. These two were just playing with each other. So sometimes the best answer is they just turn and walk away. All right, so the final hint here is number five. Zenglish becomes clear and elegant as you become clear and elegant. Zenglish becomes clear and elegant as you become clear and elegant. So don't worry that Zenglish doesn't make much sense. When I first read these things, I actually got angry. I got angry. I thought these guys, and most of these stories are about men, although there are some about women, I thought they were just messing with me. You know, I thought they were just trying to make it difficult. They were trying to obscure things on purpose. But as I got clear, the stories grew more clear. So I see them not necessarily as a bad thing, but my confusion has been a good thing for me. Bit by bit, these stories unfolded as I unfolded, and I began to marvel at their poetic brevity. I mean, how can you answer a question any more clearly than simply turning and walking? How can you do that? And the answers that some of these masters gave got clearer and more concise as time went on. Joshu is famous for whoever came to the monastery, he'd say things like, "Have you been here before?" And they'd say, "No." And he'd say, "Then go have a cup of tea." And the next visitor would come, "Have you been here before?" "Oh, yes, I've been here many times." "Then go have a cup of tea." You know, it was all about directing people right back to direct experience of life as it is. And as I've gotten more available to do that, these stories have more and more meaning to me. So they're actually speaking respectfully right to you right now. They're not dumbing down reality for you. They're saying you are capable of this. You are capable of understanding this direct teaching. I know that you're capable. Like the very first story we talked about, does dog have Buddha nature? The question really is, do you have Buddha nature? And yes, you do. You have wisdom. And these stories speak right to that in a way that says, you have wisdom and you can see this. You can see this. You're trustworthy. You're capable. Okay, so there's just one. I just want to do one more story, and it's one we might say, okay, let's do this in our normal language. Let's do this about our lives, right? Just about not something in 8th century China, but what about us? So let's think of not student and teacher, but let's think about a host and a guest. So the host might have a new person walk in, and the host might say, "Well, where did you come from?" And the guest may say, "Chicago." And the host might say, "Did you feel the cold wind blowing off the lake?" And the guest would say, "I smell the incense in this room." You know, so that's an example of a Zen dialogue in which the host and the guest are probing with each other. You know, there's an opening line, "Where did you come from?" And the person answered in the conventional way, "Chicago." But now the host is going to probe more deeply. "Did you feel the cold wind blowing off the lake?" Not in the past. I'm asking about right now. And the student who understands says, "No, I didn't. I smell the incense in this room right now. This is what's happening right now. This is Zen. This is where I really come from, the present moment."